So we are starting Shin Yud Tes, brand new discussion, brand new topic. This is the section in Shulchan Aruch that deals with the law of Borer. One of the malachas of Shabbos prohibits selecting items on Shabbos, and the way we define selecting, generally speaking, is that there are two items that are in a mixture. Yeah, that's what you have. There are two items that are in a mixture, or there could be more than two items in a mixture, but one of those items is the one that I want, and the rest of the items, the ones that I don't want, are called psolas. They're called the rejects. Even if it's just that I want one item now and the other items I don't want right now, that's good enough that the item I do want is called ochel, the food, and the other items are called the psolas, the rejects. And the normal rule is that, having nothing to do with medical cases, on Shabbos, I am allowed to do the following. I'm allowed to take the item that I want from the mixture, assuming that, number one, I take out the item I want as opposed to removing the items I don't want. Number two, I can't use a tool that is a sifting, separating type of a tool. So, for example, a slotted spoon. Right? I can't use something that is designed to filter. And number three, it has to be for immediate use. Now, immediate is a little bit of a fuzzy term. It's not going to come up in terms of the conversation here, but just for people's knowledge. Immediate means that I need to prepare this now in order to be able to use it when I want. But, you know, in other words, I don't have the option of preparing it later to use it when I want. So, you know, an example of that would be, you have the chance to set the table right now, and so you want to take the silverware that you want out of the drawer where it's all jumbled together because no one ever puts things in their slots. That's not personal or anything. So you want to take out the silverware that you want to use. The truth is, you're not going to sit down to the meal right now, but you're going to shul, and the moment you come home from shul, people are going to want to eat. So this is called immediate, because this is my opportunity to do it. So those are the three criteria normally to permit filtering or sorting things on Shabbos. And the cases he's going to discuss here are cases of filtering urine for kidney stones. And then he's going to talk also about sorting test results that come back to put them into files. So those are the primary cases he's going to mention, although you could easily envision other types of sorting that come up on Shabbos. You have, there's the autoclave, and they sterilize a whole bunch of pieces of equipment, and you want to take the ones that you want. So that might be another example. So reading the Shulchan Aruch at the top of the page first, he says, "Habor ochel mitoch pseles." If a person sorts, whatever term you want to use, food from within pseles, from within the rejects. Oh, shahayu lefanav shnei minei ochlim, or a person has two different kinds of food. Uborer min mimin acher, and he is sifting one from another. Benafa ubekvara, using nafa or kvara. Nafa and kvara are sifting implements. One is a sifter, a strainer of various kinds. Chayav, he's liable. Bekanon ubetamchui, pater aval aser. Kanon and tamchui are more plates than they are sifting things. They're not really the tools that people would ordinarily use. So that you're biblically exempt from, but rabbinically prohibited from doing. Bim birer biyado, but if you use your hand, no tool whatsoever, kedei lechol la'alter, and it's in order to eat it immediately, muter, then you're permitted. Just those the criteria that I mentioned before. Haga, the Rama comments, v'chol ma sheborer litzarech osa se'uda shemesiv b'miyad mikri la'alter, whatever you sift in order to use it at the meal that you are going to sit down to right away, that's called immediate. And what he's trying to say is, it's a variation of what I said about immediate. Let's say the thing that I want to sift is not for the first course, it's for the second or third course. So I don't have to then stop my meal in the middle to do this selection then. I can do it before the meal starts, and that's called immediate as well. That's his point. So imagine, for example, you have chicken, right? And you want to put the dark meat chicken on one tray, and that's the tray that you're going to want to put out. or the white meat, no preference. But the point is that you don't have to wait until after you have cleared the fish from the table and say, okay, now I'm going to take it all out of the pan. You can do it already before the fish. That's what the Rama is saying.
Making me think about chicken soup, right? And everybody's like, I'll have a matzo ball, I'll have carrots, I'll have no vegetables, just chicken. And you're saying you cannot use a slotted spoon to select out different things from the pot of soup.
So the slotted spoon hold off on, and the reason I say that is because one of the topics he's going to have to discuss is defining what a mixture is. If there are solids sitting in a liquid,
they're not
really necessarily called mixed into the liquid, that you can clearly visually distinguish one from another, whereas a mixture may be more like peas and carrots, you know, together in a pile. So for that reason, you may not have that issue. But let's take let's say you had that's going to come up as part of the discussion. But let's say you had a soup and there were pieces of chicken and then there were vegetables. And they said, if we want to have just chicken, we don't want to have vegetables. So for me to take the vegetables out, regardless of the implement I use, would be a problem. That would be something I would not be able to do. What I might be able to do is take out a bunch of things which may include the vegetables, and also include some of the chicken. So I didn't do any filtering. I didn't do any sifting. You know, all of this comes from malacha done in the Mishkan. That's like all the 39 malachas. So there, when they made the various flour offerings, right? You made the bread that was going to go the lechem apanim, the show bread. So one of the key stages is filtering the flour, sifting the flour. So that's where this comes from.
What about if it's personal use? Like I've served you a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
For your Shabbat dinner.
Yeah.
But you don't want to eat all the things in that bowl of soup. You don't want to eat the vegetables. You can't take. You could leave the vegetables in the bowl and eat everything else, but you couldn't take the vegetables out.
Yes.
Unless you used your fingers. Then.
Right. Yes, except for two things. Using my fingers wouldn't help me because I'm still taking out that which I don't want. But there may be two ways to deal with it. One way to deal with it would be to take out the vegetables possibly with some of the other items. And that's actually the recommended method they talk about if you have a fly in the soup or something like that, or you open your wine and you got a little piece of cork into the wine, so they recommend. So you just take a spoon, take out some of the liquid along with it, and then you have no questions. But the other, again, is going to be the question of whether a solid in a liquid is a problem at all. And that's one of the things we have to get to. He concludes the thought by saying, V'lachin mutter livur hayerek shekoren salatin. Salatin apparently was an old enough Polish word. Min ha'alin ha'me'ufashin shebo, koma shetzarech le'achobo sasuda. So he gives you an example. He says, let's say you have greens, and some of the leaves have already gotten yucky. So he says, once again, you would be able to take out the leaves that you do want from this salad, based on the amount you expect to use at that meal. So that's the Shulchan Aruch. So he jumps right into the kidney stone discussion on the lower part of the page. Binafa Evan Biklaya, right? A kidney stone. So chola sheyeshlo Evan Biklaya. If a patient has a kidney stone, umitzapel ahotzas ha'Evan bizman hashtana, and he expects to pass the stone when urinating. So tzarech lahashtin b'soch tzintzenes im misanin. So the procedure is that he is supposed to urinate into a jar with some kind of a filter. But matara litpos es ha'evin, with the goal of catching the stone, kishayotze, kadesha tipadek, msug ha'evin, ulekabel tipul miniyati, behet eim b'midasha efshari. He says the idea is, and you can tell me, but the idea is that they examine the stone in order to determine what kind it is, in order to help with preventive treatments for the future. This is consistent. This is what okay. So ha'im mutter lalaso zos gam b'Shabbos. The question is he allowed to urinate into this thing on Shabbos, knowing that the goal is to filter out the stone? Vishamati mimori harav rav Neuwirth shlita shemutter lalaso zos. So Yeshua Neuwirth, author of the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, says it's fine. No problem doing this. Why? Ki amnam ha'evin yetze ba'achas ha'pa'amim shu yashtin. He says, it's true. At some point when he urinates, he's going to pass the stone. B'Shabbos o b'chol, whether it happens on Shabbos or during the week, there's no way to know. Even if it is on Shabbos, he urinates, you know, however many times it is on Shabbos, and one time the stone comes out. But he says this is not called a guaranteed result. And what he's talking about is the issue of the rule ordinarily is that I am not prohibited from doing something which has a result that violates Shabbos if that wasn't my goal. If the prohibited part was not my goal, it's not my problem. So, for example, a case that we're going to see referred to. I'm not allowed to pluck grass from the ground on Shabbos. But if I'm walking and a piece of grass is cut from the ground, that's not my problem. I wasn't trying to cut grass. I was trying to walk. However, if it's a guaranteed result of my activity, that's called a psik resha. Psik resha comes from the extremely dubious way they entertain children before the days of Toys R Us. If you're familiar with the case, you know what I'm talking about. They talk about potentially cutting the head off of a chicken in order to give the child the head as a toy. Apparently this was the height of technology. The Gemara says, well, you can't do that on Shabbos, let alone, you know, forget whether you can do this some other day. But you can't do it on Shabbos because psik resha v'lo yamos, can you cut off its head and it won't die? You'd be killing the chicken. Ah, but that's not my goal. I didn't care about killing the chicken. I just wanted to get a toy for my kid. Nonetheless, it's a guaranteed result, right? Other than that one case, Mike the headless chicken. But generally speaking, that doesn't happen. So it's a guaranteed result, and therefore you're not allowed to do it. So his statement here is that if this fellow doesn't know each time that he does this, maybe the stone will pass, maybe the stone will not pass. And therefore, it's not considered guaranteed, even though he expects that in the aggregate, over the course of his day even, is going to pass. But each time he does this, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. I remember seeing this discussed also. He's not going to go into it here, but I remember seeing it discussed regarding the classic problem of the motion sensors. You're walking down the block, and some guy's light goes on, illuminating the street. And you can't say you don't want it to go on, because the truth is it provides light. You don't trip. But you don't intend it. You're not walking down the street trying to trigger the light. So the question is it a guaranteed result? And so one argument, I think Rabbi J. David Bleich, if I remember correctly, but it's quite a few years since I saw this, one argument was, with each step, you don't know that it's going to happen. It could be that with your collective steps, it will. But like he's saying here, this step, I have no idea that that's what that's going to cause it, and therefore it's not a psik resha, it's not a guaranteed result, and since it's not my intention, I'm okay. And that's what he says is true here, and he refers you to the Mincha Shlomo, which is from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shekose b'shem haritva yumad lamedalid, as well as tzuvos hayamud beis, dechol de'efshar shalo ye'ase isur, afilu b'tzad rachok, lo chashiv psik resha. Shlomo Zalman quotes the Ritva, we've shown an early authority, to say that if it's possible that the prohibited action will not take place, prohibited event will not take place, even if it's a remote possibility, that's good enough to eliminate the psik resha element. Where did he get this from? So I brought you on your sheets. Source Aleph is the Gemara in Yuma that he's referring to. They're talking about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. If you follow along with the Avodah on Yom Kippur, you know the Kohen Gadol has to go to Mikvah 5 times on Yom Kippur. Now, depending on whether it's a leap year or not, right, that could be September, that could be early October, it's not a very comfortable thing to be doing. Yerushalayim gets cold. So what they used to do is they would warm up the Mikvah by putting in lumps of iron that had been heated beforehand. You know, these sizzling lumps, you put them into the water, it'll heat up the water. But that is problematic, because that is tempering the metal. You heat up the metal, and then you crash cool it. You're tempering the metal. So that's the Gemara in Yuma in Source Aleph. Tanya. Raisa says, Am Rabbi Yehuda said, Ashashios shall barzel hayu mechamen me'erav Yom Kippurim. They heated up lumps of iron on Erev Yom Kippur. Umatilim lesoch tzonein. And then they threw them into the cold water, kadesha tafik tzinasan, so as to ease and to reduce the cold temperature of the water. So the Gemara says, Valo mitzareif, but you are tempering the iron by doing so. So Amar Rabibi shalom yeletziruf. Rabibi says it's no problem. The metal had not reached the stage in terms of its heating where this would have a tempering effect. Abaye Amar, Afilu Temeshe Gia Letziruf. Abaye says it's no problem. Even if it did hit that point for tempering, still, Davar She'ein Miskavein Mutter. That's not what your goal is. Your goal is to heat the water. You don't care about the effect on the lump of iron. Clear? So why isn't it a Psigreshe? That's what the Ritva wants to know in source base. Source base, the Ritva asks, Ve'im Tomar, you might ask, Va'afilu Tema de Rabbi Yehuda Shari B'davar She'ein Miskavein. Even if Rabbi Yehuda is willing to say it's permissible because it's not your intent, Sha'ani Hacha, it should be different here, De Psigreshe V'lo Yamusu. This is a Psigreshe case. It's a guaranteed result. Kevin Shigiu Litziruf, because the iron has reached the stage where it will be tempered by being cooled off like this. Va'afilu Rabbi Shimon Deshari B'Shein Miskavein Modehu B'Psigreshe V'lo Yamus. Even Rabbi Shimon, who we know says that you're permitted if it's not your intent, he agrees that you can't do it if it's a psigreshe, if it's a guaranteed result. So are we clear on the problem? Our problem is that even if it's not your intent to temper the iron, it's a guaranteed result of doing so. The Yesh Lomar, but he says you could say, the ellipsis part, there's a whole discussion about what Rabbi Yehuda actually believed, but I jumped that here. He says, V'yesh Lomar, Daha lo chashe psigreshe v'lo yamos. He says, no. Putting the iron into the mikvah like this is not called a guaranteed case of tempering it. Ki af al pisha ha'ashashios higiu litziruf. Even if the iron reached that temperature, where, by crash cooling it, you should be toughening the iron, tempering it. Esher shalo yitzdarfu b'mayim elu. It could be that it will not be tempered by being put into this water. Mipnei shalo yishu sham el ma'at. Because they only put it in briefly. Further, not all metal will have this effect when put into water. And this is the key. He says, as long as it is possible in some way that the malacha will not take place, it's not called psigreshe. And he quotes you other gemaras where he has this discussion. So the upshot of it is, and this is what Rosh Hashanah Zalman quotes, and this is what the Nishmas Avraham is relying on, since you don't know with each individual act that the stone will be passed, no filtering is taking place, and therefore you're fine. That's the idea. He then continues back in the Nishmas Avraham to say, Umosif Hashmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa adds, B'shem Agon Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal, in the name of Rosh Shlomo Zalman, Da'af im vadai dinaseis hamalacha, k'sheyaseas hamaseh ha'amim rabos. Even if you know for sure that if you do this multiple times, on one occasion, the malacha will happen, mikomakom ein ze nigra psigresha. That's still not called a guaranteed result. Da'arei aleinu lidon al kol maisa benifrad. We view each action independently. Uba oso amaisa ein ze psigresha. And in that particular action, it's not guaranteed. You know what it's like? It's like the classic end-of-life morphine scenario, right? The double effect discussion. Where, and again, leaving aside various studies on whether morphine does this or doesn't do this, because it's not the point, where they talk about giving somebody morphine, and when you're concerned about depressing the breathing, if your goal is to ease pain that is there, your goal is not to depress the breathing and end the patient's life, then you're able to administer the morphine, being careful, even though you know that eventually you'll reach a certain threshold where the patient's breathing will be so depressed that the patient will stop breathing. That's the hypothetical. Whether it fits all the realities or not isn't necessarily the point right now, but what we're saying is the person who is administering the morphine knows that after a certain number of doses, odds are one of them is going to do it. But as long as with each individual one, he doesn't know this one will do it, he's okay. That's the idea. The Shmir Shabbos that he quoted is source Gimel on the sheet. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. He says, Mutar laleches al gabei deshe. You're allowed to walk on the grass on Shabbos. Aval ein lidroch al gabei kotzim yveshim hamechubarim lakarka. But don't go walking on dried thorns that are still connected to the ground, because those are going to snap. You know that. Vim isve hadeshe gvohim. And if the grass is very tall, yelich la'at velo maher. So walk slowly. Don't walk quickly. And that way you won't pull the blades. Ubevade shlo yarutz sham, certainly you shouldn't run there. Shema yislosh min habachuber, lest you end up plucking the grass. So that's his statement. Clear? Okay. Oh, I see what I did. No, I had two more sources to see on that sheet. The Mishnah Brura there writes, in source Dalet, the Shmir Shabbos is quoting the Mishnah Brura. He says, "Umashma b'Gemara shafilu im ha'asavim hima arukos." He says, the Gemara sounds like it's saying that even if the grass is long, and therefore more likely to get pulled, "V'u holech yachif," and he's walking barefoot, "Sha'asavim regilim liyos nidbakin b'kishrei etzba'osav," where the grass normally does get into the space between his toes, and it's going to get pulled. Afilu hachimuter, it's still permissible. Delav sigreshe husheyitalesh, it's not a guaranteed result that it's going to be pulled out of the ground. Velachena, afilu mitalesh gamkein in yisra alav shu eino machabin lazeh. So even if it does get pulled up, nonetheless, it's not a guaranteed result with that particular jump. Even if it does get pulled up, there is no issue for him. And then in source Hay is where he quotes Yerav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, but the point is already much the same as what we already said. We treat each step individually. So even though you know that at the end of X number of steps you will have pulled up grass, with each individual one you don't know if this one is going to do it. Okay. Back into the discussion here. Back on the Nishmas Avram. He says, "V'yisera mizu kosev hagon or Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal." Shlomo Zalman even wrote more than this. "V'chazi nami le'itzdarufe." You could also combine, as another point in his favor, permitting this, "Mashakazav ashilti giborim liyashiv das harashba b'shabas davkuvav." That which the Shilta Giborim wrote to explain the position of the Rashba in the Gemara in Shabbos, "Shematir linol beso lishmor, avshetzvi nimtza besocho, velo chashib sigresha," where the Rashba says, you're allowed to lock your house in order to keep the house safe, even though there's a deer running around in the house, and it doesn't have to be a deer, that happens to be the case, but you had a bird, right? There's a concern that on Shabbos I'm not allowed to trap things. So the bird is flying around, you lock your door, now the bird is going to be trapped inside, and he says that's not called psigresha, assuming your intent wasn't to trap it, your intent was to lock the house so that the house should be safe. So what is he talking about in the Shilta Giborim? If you take a look back on the sheet at source Vav, I brought you his source. Harash Bakasa, the Rashba wrote, "Veheviu devarav haranu magid Mishnah Zal," who's quoted by various others, Perakud Menachos Shabbos, "Shimhaya yodeya kodim shesagar hadelas, shaya beveso tzvi, shemuter lino beso v'lishmar tzvi shabesochov." You're allowed, you knew you had a deer in your house, you are allowed to lock the door, knowing that that will also guard the deer inside. Even though, by locking it, the deer is also trapped. That's okay. He says something very interesting. He says it's okay as long as your goal is not only keeping the deer inside. In other words, having two motives is fine. Even though one of my motives is to trap the deer, nonetheless, I'm still okay. And then he says, "Vaharan, vaharamban, pliki alei." The Ran and the Ramban disagree with the Rashba. "Basavi shekol yishayodeya sheish tzvi b'bayis kodim sheyin ol aval pishem iskaven l'shmiras habayis v'afil lo yiskaven klal l'tzedas tzvi da'aser lo lino as habayis davi psigreshe." The Ran and the Ramban disagree. They say if you know there's a deer in the house before you lock it, even if your intent is only for the house, you're still not allowed to lock it because that's a psigreshe. So the question is, how do I justify the Rashba? Right? The Ran says, if you know there's a deer there, you're out. There's no way you can do this. The Rashba seems to be fine. And even fine where you intended to trap the deer there. So how do I explain the Rashba? So he says, we're bolded in source Vav, "V'hashta l'divrei harashba nimtzeinu l'meidim da'af agav de kaimalun de psikreshe asur Hainu davka sheba oso maisa da abed hapsig reshe eino miskavin ve'eino osa devar heter imo. Aval im ba oso hapsig reshe she osa devar heter imo v'iskavin gam le devar heter imo. As a filu of psikreshu machavin gamlo shari, he says something remarkable. He says, well, the reason this works for the Rashba is that even if it is a psikreshu, the negative result, the result that's prohibited, is a guaranteed result. Nonetheless, if what you are doing is an action that has two results, and this is the double effect, your goal is the permissible one. In this case, your goal is locking your house to keep your belongings safe. Then even though it will also have the effect of locking in the deer, I'm good with that. That's the way that the Shulta Giborim justifies the Rashba. So that's a truly remarkable statement. I mean, that's really expanding what we can do. And he says, back in Nishmas Avram, he says, the Magen Avram said you shouldn't rely on that idea of the Shulta Giborim for the Rashba. Mikomakom ayin sham bishuas Yaakov shemivar yafes dvarav ledivrayhem ein iser klal benidon didan afi havi mamish psik reish. He says it certainly helps us out, and the issue is Yaakov took his side. So between the two points, between the fact that I really don't intend the prohibited purpose, only the permitted one, and the fact that more importantly, the fact that you don't know which act is going to produce the stone, that makes it okay. And then we get to his last point, which was the one about the solid and the liquid. He says, "Od hey early mori rabbi shlita b'chsav." He says, "My rabbi," and when he says "my rabbi," I think he means Rav Neubert. He says shlita, so it has to be, because at that time Neubert was alive, but Shlomo Zalman was not. So he says, "My rabbi, Rav Neubert, pointed out to me in a letter, she'ein hotzas even hanimtzes b'mei raglayim, dahinu gush b'nozel, nikres ta'arobes." He says, removing the stone from the urine, which is a solid object found in a liquid, he says, that's not called a mixture. Umela ein kam leches brera. So there is no act of borer at all. You didn't do any selecting. He says the rule is, if there's not a mixture, then there's no issue of selection, and you're fine. The only thing is, he has a problem, because the popular practice is to view a solid in a liquid as a mixture. That is the way we normally look at it. And he brings the case in parentheses here. He says, we are strict when it comes to taking a fly out of somebody's tea, where we say that that if a person has a cup of tea and there's a fly in the tea, so he's not supposed to just pull it out, right? He takes a spoon, he takes out some liquid along with it. So he says, "Kvar makshakena chazanish." He says, "Yeah, the chazanish asked that question." Now he doesn't tell us what the chazanish said. Are there enough sheets? There's this one here. So he says the Chazanish asks that question, but he doesn't tell you what he said. That's why I brought you it on here, though, in Source Zion, where the Chazanish discusses this this possibility that a liquid inside a solid is not called a mixture. He says, "Venira devade svaras maritz emes." He says this idea that he is quoting, which we've already seen, that if something is simply floating in a liquid on its own, that's not an issue of borer. Borer only applies when items are mixed together. The definition of an act of borer, an act of selection, is that at the end of my activity, you will have something that is pure. Before it was mixed with other things, and now it's going to be pure. That's the definition. He says, I'll prove it to you from the Gemara in Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch quoted it. Dimutar lishpos hayayin min hakli ulhaniach hashmarim. You would be allowed to tilt a receptacle such that the wine will pour out and leave the sediment behind. That's what the Gemara says. But you have to stop that process when you reach the stage at which the wine is already reduced and just dripping out of the sediment directly. The sediment itself has wine that's absorbed in it. So at that point, you'd have to stop. So even though the sediment is with the wine in the same vessel that, you know, as the Gemara is discussing, and you are indeed letting the wine drip out and leaving the sediment, mutter, it's still allowed, because each one stays independently. The solid and the liquid are independent. That's a Gemara, he says. So very clearly, I'm not concerned about a solid that's inside a liquid. But when you get to the end, the dregs that are at the bottom, the sediment that's at the bottom, that is a mixture. And if you separate them, that is called borer. So if you want to talk about a fly being in the wine, you could say that the drops of wine that are on the body of the fly, shame tarovas alav, that also has the status of a mixture. He says, and that's why you can't take the fly directly out. It's borer because of the wine that was right next to its body, that was between its wings. So you take a little liquid with it. That's the practice. And whatever remains, that's not called borer, because the fly was not mixed into that wine. The fly was only mixed into the small bit of wine that was directly on the body. So applying that here to the case of the kidney stone that's, you know, that they need to filter from the urine, the Nishmas Avram says that's a second reason to be lenient. His first reason was it's not psik reshe. But his second reason is, in addition to it not being a psik reshe, he says it's also not an act of borer in the first place, because it's a solid inside a liquid. And that goes back to your question then about the soup. That's the idea. Now, again, if you have multiple kinds of solids in the liquid, then all bets are off. If you have vegetables in there and you have chicken in there, then taking one out, taking out a piece of the meat or taking out a piece of the vegetables will indeed, that will present a problem. Then you know, that's a different situation. Clear? Yeah.
The stone has, it's a bit like the wine. I guess initially when you separate them, that's what the first part is for sure would just be the urine, right? But then as you get closer to the end of it, then there would be potentially, like,
in other words, there was some urine that was on the stone.
Yeah.
Right. So I was wondering about that in this case, because you don't remove it. You don't remove it from the liquid. In other words, whatever liquid was there that was close enough to it, that's on the body of it, when this person passes urine into a jar, into, you know, with this filter thing, it's going to remain with the stone anyway.
So you're saying it's the opposite, in the sense that if it's the wine, you really want the liquid, and here you really want the solid.
I think so.
You're sort of reversing this.
Yeah. And also that you're not separating the liquid that's actually close to the body of the stone.
Because it'll be left behind.
It'll be left behind. I don't know. I don't know what the filter looks like. I'm sort of imagining. No, on the stone itself.
No. But the stone's also going to be like a couple millimeters. Like it's going to be even smaller than the fly.
Yeah.
I don't know if the dimensions matter. The amount of urine that would still be on a 2-millimeter stone.
Well, the question is really when he says, I mean, this is odd piece at the end of the Chazon Ish, that there's, you know, there are drops of liquid that are on the fly. If you really believe what the Chazon Ish is saying, right? If you really take the view that the drops of liquid that are on the fly are your problem, right? The drops of liquid that are on the fly are what's going to disturb are the part that was the mixture, right? And the part you're not supposed to be, that you're not supposed to be separating. Again, they're going to come out with the fly. When you pull the fly out of the wine or out of the tea or whatever it is, those drops are staying with it.
But if that was the case, then why can't you just take the fly out?
Right. Well, that's my question.
But you have to take something.
Some of the fly.
You have to take liquid
some
with
of,
it.
Some of the
you can't just take the fly by itself.
Right. I mean, it sounds to me like when you read this this comment from the Chazon Ish, it sounds like he's looking for a way to justify the fact that we normally tell people to take out some liquid with it. Especially because the liquid that you're going to take out with it is not the liquid that was near the body of it. In other words, you haven't really solved the problem. When you reach in with your spoon and you take out liquid with it, that liquid wasn't part of the mixture. The mixture was whatever was like right by the body of the fly. So I'm not at all clear on what his suggestion is. It sounds like he's trying to justify what everybody's doing, but whatever he's doing sounds like a chumrah. It doesn't sound like it's actually core obligation. That's the way it sounds to me.
The other part is that sometimes the storms could be a little bit more like the sediment with the wine. Not necessarily. Like sometimes they're hard and separate, and sometimes it's a problem. You know, that could be not so.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that case, then he would lose this part altogether. If it really is,
but you don't know what it is until it happens. Yeah. That's the other part. You don't know what it is. You don't know that it's a definite stone.
Right.
You don't even know how to treat it.
Yeah.
No,
and you don't know how it's going to come out. You could know that there's maybe a small stone, but it may come out in pieces or in sediment.
Right. The argument of solid and liquid being separate entities, I think, relies on the idea that the solid is in a visible form as something that is unique and separate from the liquid. The more gravelly it gets, the less valid that argument goes.
I think usually...
I mean, his first argument still stands.
Tiny little thing, usually. They're shockingly small for the amount of pain they cause.
Mm-hmm. What if you've been with the
first argument is
that's true. I wasn't thinking about that. Then it might have shattered into a whole bunch of pieces.
Right. Right.
But the first argument you're saying is because you never know which time that you're getting it's going to separate.
Correct. And that takes care of the problem regardless. He's making this added note, which I think is a fascinating note with many applications in terms of Shabbos.
I'm still stuck in this. I don't think this helps us with this question with the deer and you can't lock your house. So you're locking your house so what, burglars won't come in.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing is, you can't even close your door. If the point is trapping the deer, whether your door is locked or not, the deer is trapped. You have to leave your door open to not trap the deer.
Right. Locking equals closing. It's not, don't distinguish between the two in their structures.
Because in order to not trap the deer, you would have to leave your door wide open, which is practically an invitation that people should come.
Correct. Wow. Correct.
Or just take the deer.
All right. So let's see what happens now, because he's moving on to what was on the top sea of Gimel. Hayu lefan of shnei minei ochlim me'orabim. Person has... Right. On the top, it's the bottom line of the Shulchan Aruch section. Hayu lefan of shnei minei ochlim me'orabim. Somebody has two different foods that are mixed together, and he wants one of them. Borer echad, me'echad, u'meiniach hasheni kidei lechol miyad. So you take one out of one, and you leave behind the other one to eat the first one right away. Right? And this is the classic. This is what I already described. And then the Rambam goes on and says, if you have two pieces of fish, they are called two different kinds of foods, and so forth. I'm not even going to go into that. It's not germane for the discussion right now directly. There are things you could draw from it, but not right now. So in the on the bottom, he writes, Mestapek ha-prim begadim. Prim begadim has a question. V'embirer min echad mechaveiro. V'daito laniach shnehem ala achar zman. What if you're sifting out two different types of items? We're at the bottom here. You're sorting two different types of items, planning to use neither of them right now. right? Your goal is to use them eventually, but right now you're not using either one. So is one called the food and the other one the reject? Or are they both reject? Are they both food? How do you view it? Is that called borer? Which one is going to be called the food? Which one is going to be called the reject? Ulam kosev habir halacha, but the bir halacha writes, he says, shenira lo pashut milashon harambam, desvira le bazesh, shalakach komin v'min ubiru la'atzmo dechayev. The bir halacha writes that it seems obvious to him from the Rambam's language that the Rambam believes that if you take each item, each species out and separate it out, you're going to be chayev. Ulam im hubor zehamin sharot zelito lishtamish bo achsha v'sha'ar yisharu al makoma mutter. But if you're taking the one you want for now, then you're fine. But if you're not planning on using it, you're going to be stuck. Now, I brought you this bir halacha here on the side sheet. First test and then test, and then you just will apply it to the medical, the test results question. Right? The test results come back, and they send you a bunch of results for a bunch of different files. You're not using any of them right now, but you have to then put this result in this file, and this result in this file, none of which are the ochel, because you don't want any of them. So are you allowed to put the results into the files? That's where he's going to go with this.
But you're allowed to sort through them in case there is one in there that you need for now.
Well, then you're just thumbing through it, looking for
the one you
need.
Want.
Yeah. So the Rambam writes, it's in Ches. Boer ochon bitok psoles. If you filter out food from the reject material, oshayu lefanav shnei minei ochlin, or you add two different kinds of food, uberer min mimin acher, and you separated one kind from another, benafa ubekvara, and the whole thing as the Shulchan Aruch distinguished between the different types of utensils. But the Rambam's cases were food from reject, or two different kinds of food. So in source test, the Bir Halacha writes, Hinei haprima gadim mistapik. The prima Bir Halacha is, generally speaking, either the Mishnah Berurah or parts of it are his son-in-law. But the prima gadim writes, is not sure, I should say, the imbirer min echad mechaveiro. If someone separates one species from another, v'daito laniach shnehem ala achar zman. He doesn't want either of them right now. He's putting them away. Is that borer? Which one is the food? Which one is not the food? That's the prima gadim, which we already saw quoted in here. You know where this would be relevant? Outside of a medical setting. This would be relevant if you played chess with somebody. Right? You played chess, and now you're putting it away, and you want to put all the white pieces in one box and all the black pieces in the other box. So, is that a borer problem? You know, so that would be part of this. Lefiani is dainty near a pashut milashona Rambam. He says, it appears clear from the Rambam's language that borer is when you separate one species from another, one kind from another, such that you will then have each one separate. That's the malacha. But if you plan to eat right away, and that's the one that you have in your hand, and you're doing it with your hand and not with an implement, so then that's the way of eating and then you're fine. The imkain kavachomer hadavar, uma hecha sheheniach minechad amakomo shach shem brera, koshkin bazesh shalaka kominu minu bero la'atzmo dechayev. What he's saying essentially is this. Don't look at it as a question of, can I define this as this one I want, this one I don't want? That's not his point. He says, boer is prohibited. Separating species is prohibited. Using them now is prohibited. Using them later is prohibited. There is only one way in which it will be fine, which is if I take out the one that I want to use right now. If I have a case in which I don't plan to use any of them right now, no good. Then I'm going to be chayav. The only circumstance in which I'm okay is if I am using one of them right now, and that's the one I'm taking, because, as the Gemara says, and the Rambam knows, it's derech achila. That's the manner of eating. That's my get-out-of-borer-free card. But if I'm not doing it in a manner of eating, then it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Leaving it for later, not leaving it for later, it doesn't make a difference. It's no good. So, from this, it would sound like I have a problem with the medical records, assuming I'm not looking for one that I do need right now. It would sound like it's a problem. So, look what he does with this. Let's see where he takes this. Miyun totsa ot shal bedikot. Miyun is sorting. A min is a species, is a kind. Miyun is sorting among kinds. So, sorting the results of tests. V'lachin, therefore, he says, V'beit ha'cholim k'shemagios b'vas achas meha'ma'abada totzaos shalkama b'dikos ha'shayachos l'cholim shonim. In a hospital, he says, when at once you get a whole bunch of results from different tests from the lab, and they relate to different patients, asur l'mayeno sam l'shem hachnasasam l'tikos shalkochol v'chola. You would not be allowed to then sort them out and say, this is going in this folder, this one is going in that folder. Ulam, however, mutter l'rofe l'hachnis kol tshuva miyadach reishi istakel ba l'gilyon shalo sochole. Kizelo nikra boer, kevin shalo birer kol davar, el lakach biyad v'histakel. He says what you do is, you take the first result, you read it, and then you put it away. You picked it up not as a sorting thing, you picked it up to look at it. You looked at it, you gained information, and then you put it down. The place where you're going to put it down is going to be the folder of that particular patient.
Yes,
yeah,
like using the
other reading. Yes, exactly what you're doing. Yeah. He mentions the autoclave case. He says also if you have a bunch of small instruments, the same issue. To put it down in the place, each one in its place that's appropriate for it. So he will not want you just to do that simply. He'll want you to take it and find some use or something. Yeah, you'll examine it. Is this clean? Is this proper? Is it sharp enough? Whatever it is. The Kosev HaRav Eliezer Voldenberg Zatzal, the Tzitz Eliezer, he wrote, L'da'ati, in my view, kishenitkal harofei bekoshiyim lahachnis kol tshuva mitotzaot habitikot hama'abatiyot lecholim shonim legilyon shal oso chole. The Tzitz Eliezer wrote, if it's difficult, he has a whole bunch of results that he has to sort, and he's going to have a hard time putting them all into the different envelopes. Efshar lahatir gam l'mayeno sam l'shem achnasasam l'tiko shal kochola v'chola v'lismoch she'ein isur borer b'kiya gavna. He says, you know what? It's not going to be borer. You can just do it straight. Put it into the folders, and it will not be borer. Hanimokim l'kach imatzei barichos b'sifri tzitz el yezer yud beiz lamed hei b'diyuni ha'arochim shach isur borer v'sfarmu pitkaot. He says, I had a long discussion of this in my tzitz el yezer regarding whether borer applies at all when you're dealing with papers, with books and papers and notes. So I didn't actually look that up yet because I didn't think we were going to get this far. So I have to bring the Tzitz Eliezer, I hope, next week. But he says, if you're stuck and the option of picking it up and looking at it isn't an option, or perhaps there are, I don't know, privacy issues or whatever it is, you're not the doctor necessarily for all of the patients whose files are in your hand. So he says there is a way out according to the Tzitz Eliezer. So we have to come back to that next week, God willing, and see why it shouldn't be an issue.
But the real problem is that I don't get very many paper results. It's all on computer.
Well, that's not a problem.
Bad enough you're on the computer. Well, so I'll get, like, in my inbox, there'll be 20. For some reason, well, I'll say I have a sick patient. I don't know.
That won't be a borer problem. You may have other issues.
Well, I'll see 20 labs with results there. I'll look for my patient's name and click on it.
Right, but they're not in a mixture. I mean, they're not.
They don't even
there's no
exist.
Physical item.
Yeah, they don't even
there's
exist.
No physical item at all. No,
although I would be sorting them to different, you know.
Yeah, but that's
certain,
not. But so that's not.
I
the
don't even
sorting.
Get paper.
So the practical problem is if you have the machine spits out a bunch of results and you're looking for patient B.
Yeah.
So you don't. You're not looking at each of the test results.
You're looking for the name.
You're looking for B.
Right, but when you're talking about paper. So when I have my stack of results and the machine just spit out, I pick up one, I look at it, is this B? No. Pick up the next one, look at it, is this B? No. And so on until I get it. I don't have to look at the results. It's not the result per se. I looked at the paper, I gleaned the information I needed to glean, and I'm fine. Similarly, you have a set of svarim on the shelf, right? You're not sure which one has what you want. So you've pulled the safer off the shelf. You look inside, not what I wanted, you put it back. Nothing wrong with doing that. Until you find the one that has what you're looking for. Yeah, that would not be a problem.
So why would you think it's a problem?
The problem that does come up is the case in which you're not looking at them for anything. In other words, you're just sorting them and you're not using anything.
Right.
That's where you would run into problems. The case that you're giving, you do have one that you're looking for that you want. You're just trying to find the ohel, so to speak. Yeah.
The classic description of war is like if you don't like a bone in your meat, then you have to take it off with some meat.
That's one of the cases that people talk about. Yeah. Yeah. That and the peas and carrots.
You have to take away.
Whichever one you don't want, and yeah.
Take some of the other things away.
Right. Or you just take out the ones that you want, which is the more common way to deal with it. Yeah, it doesn't work in the bone case.
Well, you could leave the bone in the bowl and eat around it.
Yeah.
But you can't take it out of the bowl unless you take some of the good stuff with it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next week, God willing.